Nottamadasta, of course, talks about that envy being like a spear in the heart. So how happy can you be with a spear in your heart? And also Kamsa, in his previous birth, was whom? Named Kalanemi, who was something like a son of Hiranyakashipu, son or grandson of, I think a son of Hiranyakashipu, maybe grandson. And he wanted something. And what he did when he wanted something is he worshipped someone other than Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu became very upset because no one is allowed to worship anyone but Hiranyakashipu. So anyway, eventually he was killed by the Lord. He made him fight the Lord. He said, either I'll kill you or you do this. So anyway, Kamsa, so he, because what we have in our previous life is carried to this life, and what we have in this life in a similar way is carried to the next life. So as the Bhagavatam describes, that you can tell a person's last life by their current situation, and you can tell a person's next life by their current situation too. So it's important that we change our current situation to Krishna consciousness, because that will indicate what our next life will be. And also it indicates that how much we are in need of mercy, because the material energy is so entangling, very hard to get out of. Mama Maya Dratya, because it's deviation, because it's Gunamayi, the material energy is empowered by Krishna, divinely inspired and empowered. One cannot escape from it easily, only by giving oneself to Krishna. So when Mustika and Chanura were killed, and then Sala, Toshala, Kuta, etc. were killed as well, some of them quite nonchalantly. Of course, the one that sticks in my mind was that Krishna gave someone, kicked someone and ripped them in half. That's really a good one. So even his toes are all powerful, which is a very good thing for the devotees who take shelter of his toes and his lotus feet. So everyone was thrilled, especially those who were worried about Krishna, because part of prema means anxiety and fear for the one who's the vishaya, the object of one's prema. So therefore, the materialistic mind is always seeking liberation, because it doesn't want to even deal with the fear and anxieties of prema, of loving relationship with Krishna. It just wants to be free from peace, from all anxiety and suffering, and attain peace. So in any case, everyone was rejoicing. Almost everyone. Everyone except Kamsa rejoiced at the wonderful feat Krishna and Balaram had performed. And the exalted brahmanas and great saints exclaimed, excellent, excellent. The Bhoja king, that's Kamsa, king of the Bhoja dynasty, seeing that his best wrestlers had all been killed or had fled, he stopped the musical performance originally meant for his pleasure, and he spoke the following words, because there was such a celebration and the atmosphere was so joyous that Krishna had killed the wrestlers. Um, and the band was playing, and the trumpets were playing, maybe also bassoon, I don't know, but at least Shanai was playing. So Kamsa really upset him, because everyone else was in a celebrating mood because Krishna was victorious, and he on the other hand was completely morose because he was hoping that his death would himself meet death in the hands of the wrestlers. So he immediately stopped the band from playing, he stopped the trumpets from playing, he stopped all the celebratory mood, and he became very angry, and he said, "Drive the two wicked sons of Vasudev out of the city." So this was his vision, that they were so bad for having killed the wrestlers who Kamsa was planning on killing them. "Drive the two wicked sons of Vasudev out of the city. Confiscate the cowherd boys and men's property, and arrest that fool Nanda. Kill that most evil fool Vasudev." Why was he so angry at Nanda and Vasudev too? Because he understood that the son of Vasudev, who had it been predicted, the Akashvani had predicted would be Kamsa's death, the cause of Kamsa's death, he was Krishna, that Vasudev was duplicitous. He had tricked him. He was thinking that Vasudev was completely honest and he trusted him, nice, innocent Kamsa. He was thinking, "Vasudev has cheated me by smuggling out somehow or another his actual son, as Durga Devi had said." And smuggled him out and kept him in the home of Nanda Maharaj, because he's saying that these two boys are the sons of Vasudev. So of course he was thinking that this was the fact previously, but now it was completely confirmed. "You've come just at the right time. Kamsa is about to die. That's a very auspicious time." So he was raving like this, and he was threatening Krishna's dearest devotees, Krishna's dearest, threatening Vasudev Nanda, and then he continued even, "And also kill my father, Ugrasena." See, when one is angry, and one has a big enough, one has false ego, one is capable of anything. And when one feels threatened oneself, and this is the meaning of false ego, practically speaking, one may be nice on the outside, but inside is a raging false ego, actually. And if it's threatened, it's capable of anything. And this has been seen in the course of history. People have done, even sort of ordinary people, in difficult circumstances, or when the circumstance was suitable for them, they're capable of committing the most horrendous, terrible acts. So he said, "Kill my father Ugrasena, along with his followers, who have all sided with our enemies," because they were not his devotees. Because Kamsa was a Rakshasa, basically speaking. He capable of killing anyone. So Kamsa was raving and raging on. It was so audacious, because he was the one, audacious means absurd, ridiculous, on one level, and it was so far beyond what is proper, because after all he had arranged this celebration of the sacrifice of the bow, and he had also arranged the wrestling match to accompany it, and he had arranged the wrestling match, and as Chinura said to Krishna, "We have heard that you are very strong, so now let us see how strong you are." And Kamsa also told this to Nanda Maharaj, that "You have not come and seen me until right now, until the actual wrestling match, even though you've been in the city for a day. Is it that you're afraid? Are you afraid of me? Because your son Krishna has broken the sacrificial bow, the bow of Lord Shiva. No, you shouldn't be afraid. We knew your son Krishna was powerful, and that's why we've called him here to wrestle, to see the extent of his powers. So now Krishna has shown his powers. I mean, not all of his powers, just a tiny, smallest portion of his powers. And now Kamsa's speaking like this. He's so angry. So his anger really was the symptom that his death was approaching. So as Kamsa raved so audaciously, the infallible Lord Krishna, he's infallible, avyaya, means also immeasurable, means eternal, inexhaustible, and here it's translated as infallible, because if I become angry, I'm falling down from, well, sometimes it's falling up from the mode of ignorance, if you can fall up, but from the point of the soul, it's a lessening. Because anger is passion, but then immediately goes to ignorance. Why does it go to ignorance? Because why is it considered ignorant? Because it's the opposite of goodness. In goodness, one sees things in proper perspective. And one's consciousness, unagitated by the, undisturbed by the passion and ignorance, it's focused. It can be focused on something. Because we can't, as long as we're passionate and ignorant, it's very difficult to remain focused. So the mode of ignorance is focused, but in an inappropriate way. When one is angry, one is capable of anything because one's consciousness is so focused, one only sees what one wants, the violent thing that one wants to do. One can't see another perspective or even the resultant reaction of what one does. But when Krishna becomes angry, Kamsa became angry and Krishna became angry. For Kamsa's anger was a symptom of his demonic nature, while Krishna's anger was a symptom of avyayam, his infallible nature, and it was completely consistent, because Krishna is so much bhaktavatsala, a lover and protector of his devotees, so it was an extension of his transcendental mood of loving his devotees. So Krishna quickly and easily, immediately, intensely angry, not only angry, but intensely angry, like Lord Nisringadev practically. He easily jumped up onto the high royal dais, the platform, plinth, where Kamsa was sitting before and now raging. And seeing Lord Krishna approaching like death personified with such fixed determination, the quick-witted Kamsa instantly rose from his seat and took up his sword and shield. He was ready for the fight now, and he was very powerful. Sword in hand, Kamsa moved quickly from side to side like a hawk in the sky. But Lord Krishna, whose fearsome strength is irresistible, that's an interesting way to describe strength, irresistible, that no one can resist it. That means if someone is irresistible, if someone's strength is irresistible, and actually nothing can resist that person's strength, his strength is unlimited, practically speaking. Say if my strength is very strong and it's pushing in this way, and then it comes to a point and it's resisted. So something has resisted my whatever strength I have, so that strength is limited because it has failed to push its way through some resistance. So everyone in this world, no matter how strong they are, their strength is limited and therefore resistible. Someone is very powerful, he can control a whole country even, but then he gets some disease and what's that called again? The immunity system? What's its purpose? To defend the body, to resist disease from taking over. So it fights with the white blood cells, etc. So eventually the body must break down. It cannot resist ultimately all the diseases. It cannot resist old age, and of course it cannot resist death. So therefore, since death rules this world, and everyone must succumb to death, whether we want to succumb to it or not, and of course no one does, basically. But that means that whatever strength we have is not irresistible, it is resistible on some level. So his strength, so Kamsa was with a sword and a shield, and he was resisting the irresistible strength of Krishna. And immediately Krishna just knocked away the defense and offensive mechanisms of Kamsa. He powerfully seized the demon, just as the son of Taksha might capture a snake. Who is the son of Taksha? But in this case, Garuda. Grabbing Kamsa by the hair, immediately he grabbed him by the hair, and before he killed him, he knocked off his crown. Why did he knock off his crown? He was dethroning him, he was insulting him, he was telling him that you're not the king. He was, because Sarva Upadi, Vinaya Muktam, he had assumed this Upadi. It's like we assume so many designations or false concepts of who we are. So many, so many. And just as the irresistible force of Krishna knocked off this upadi, this crown of Kamsa, that I am the king, he had stolen the kingship from the rightful king of Ugrasena, and he had imprisoned him, and now was talking about killing him. So he knocked off this upadi, because the irresistible knocks off everything temporary. So Krishna is death too, and he will knock off all the upadis, all the crowns we have, all the designations we have, all the pride that we have. Everything becomes so crumbles into fine powder, into ash, by the irresistible force of Krishna's external energy. If we consider these things that are not ourselves to be ourselves. So, in any case, grabbing Kamsa by the hair, which that's also an insult, and knocking off his crown, the lotus-naveled lord threw him off the elevated dais onto the wrestling mat. So he just threw him off. So he jumped up on the dais in an instant, and no one could even see him practically do that. He was so intensely angry. And then he immediately knocked off his crown and he threw him off the dais. And then the independent lord, the supporter of the entire universe, threw himself upon the king. Now this is very interesting. According to what Srila Prabhupada said in the Krishna book, he describes the death of Kamsa as follows. This is in the purport. Krishna at once straddled Kamsa's chest and began to strike him over and over again. Simply from the strokes of his fist, Kamsa lost his life, his vital force. Here it says he threw himself on the king. He, the supporter of the entire universe, threw himself on the king. The way that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this, and he describes the death of Kamsa, is saying that before we get to that point, let me just read some of the purports here. As Kamsa raved so audaciously, the infallible Lord Krishna intensely angry quickly and easily jumped up upon the high royal dais. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna became extremely angry upon hearing this enmity addressed to his devotees. So therefore he doesn't fall down from his position. So that's so reassuring to someone who's aspiring to be a devotee, because Krishna doesn't fall down from his position in taking care of his devotees ever, and his commitment to his devotees. So Krishna became so angry on hearing this. And Krishna, unlike most living entities, does not lose his power of discrimination when he's intensely angry. Krishna jumped so quickly on the king's platform that no one saw him do it. So Kamsa picked up his sword and shield, and Krishna captured him. He's irresistible. And then he threw him. Then the independent lord, the support of the entire universe, threw himself upon the king. And then Vishwanath's purport is, Krishna threw himself upon the fallen body of Kamsa. So he threw Kamsa off so that his own body would not be injured by hitting the ground. And then he himself jumped. So he used Kamsa as a pillow to cushion his fall. But also, at that moment, he thought of himself as the shelter of the universe, which was burdened by Kamsa. So he assumed the weight of Krishna, assumed the weight of the entirety of the universe. And then he landed on Kamsa, both to cushion his own fall, and he killed him just by assuming the weight of the universe. Because who can... And this was nothing for Krishna, because he's irresistible, and the universe itself is resistible. It's finite. Huge, but finite. So he crushed Kamsa in this way and killed him just in such a simple way. Simple in the sense of he didn't have to do anything other than land on him, but not simple in the sense that he assumed the weight of the entire universe, which isn't simple. And then, as a lion drags a dead body, so the next verse just immediately talks about he's dead. The Lord then dragged Kamsa's dead body along the ground in full view of everyone present. And everyone was shocked. O King, Sukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Pariksit, all the people in the arena tumultuously cried out, oh, they were shocked that the king, who had been terrorizing everyone, who was the power of the city, who had was ruling everything, who had so many armies before him, and everyone who was feared by everyone, he was just dead in such a simple way. So everyone was shocked. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, I'll read it here. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that many people in the audience thought Kamsa had simply been knocked unconscious when thrown from the lofty dais. Therefore Krishna dragged his corpse so everyone would realize that the evil king was indeed dead, because there was once some story of when India was under the control of the Muslims, the Qazis in the 17th century or 16th century, so this in Bengal. So when there's a story how, I can't remember where I heard it exactly, but when one of the Qazi, the village ruler, his dog died, and he decided to have a funeral for it. So everyone in the village came. And then a few years later, he died, and no one in the village came. But the reason, anyway, the reason why they came when his dog died is because they were afraid of him. And when he died, no one came because they weren't afraid of him anymore. There was no love lost. So Krishna showed that indeed he was dead now. And therefore no one had to fear from him anymore. Because if you think he's not dead, then I should be careful of what I say at this point. If I look joyous, then he gets up and then he says, "What? You are happy that I died?" And then finish. So they did not think he was dead. Therefore Krishna dragged his corpse so everyone would realize that the evil king was indeed dead. The audience expressed their surprise, exclaiming, "Haheti, ha ha, oh, oh," because Lokamsa was a great warrior. He had been killed with such disdain. Just nothing, Krishna has landed on him. The audience's astonishment is also mentioned in the Vishnu Purana. Quotation from the Vishnu Purana. Then the entire arena became filled with cries of astonishment as the people saw that the king of Mathura had been contemptuously killed by Krishna. Kamsa had always been disturbed by the thought that the Supreme Lord was to kill him. Therefore, when drinking, eating, moving about, sleeping, or simply breathing, the king had always seen the Lord before him with the disc weapon in his hand. So this is also described in the 7th canto, 1st chapter, how the essence of spiritual life, of Krishna consciousness, especially of Krishna consciousness as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is that our consciousness, our thoughts, our mind, etc., and our life should be absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. We should become absorbed in thinking of Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness. And tasting the sweetness of that. So Kamsa was in Krishna consciousness. His mood was not favorable, but he was always thinking of Krishna. And therefore, he achieved the rare boon of attaining a form like the Lord. So he attained Tat Eva Rupam Duravapamappa. So he achieved this Durdaivam, very difficult to achieve, Rupa, the form, just like Krishna, the same form, Sarupya Mukti. So how does Krishna reciprocate? This is the kind of prayer that Brahma, called Brahma, situation that made Brahma amazed, that if you reciprocate with Putana, or he didn't say Kamsa, but Kamsa in this way, because he's thinking about you in such enmity and fear, you still give him liberation and a form just like yours because he's thinking of your form. So how are you going to reciprocate with those who love you? If someone does something good amidst an ocean of badness and you reward him by bringing him to the spiritual world, so Vaikuntha Vas, so how are you going to reward those who think of you with love and devotion or are always trying to serve you? So this is very mysterious. So the purport here, although born out of fear, Kamsa's constant meditation on the Supreme Lord eradicated all his offenses, and therefore the demon was liberated upon his death at the Lord's hands. But then the battle was not over, because when someone is killed, especially in you have to deal with the family members. So the 8 younger brothers of Kamsa, led by Kanka and Yagrodhaka, then attacked the Lord in a rage, seeking to avenge their brother's death. As they ran swiftly towards the 2 lords, Krishna and Balaram, ready to strike, the son of Rohini slew them with his club, just as a lion easily kills other animals. Kettle drums resounded in the sky as Brahma, Shiva, and other demigods, the Lord's expansions, rained down flowers upon Krishna with pleasure. They chanted his praise, and their wives danced. Oh, dear one. Then, my dear king, the wives of Kamsa, now we heard the brothers of Kamsa, now what are the wives? They're not going to attack Krishna with their weapons. But they had a different mood. Still, even though he was so terrible, he was horrible, but still the wives had affection for him. The wives of Kamsa and his brothers. Now there was more than Kamsa's wives who were lamenting deaths. It was Kamsa's wives, Kamsa's brothers' wives too. They were grieved. The wives were grieved by the death of their well-wishing husbands. They came forward with tearful eyes, beating their heads, embracing their husbands who lay on a hero's final bed. The sorrowful women loudly lamented while shedding constant tears. And here was their lamentation. The women cried out, "Alas, O Master, O dear one, O knower of religious principles, O kind and compassionate protector of the shelterless." So this is the nature of, what is that saying? Love is blind. So one could first think, how could they possibly love him?
That's the culture.
That's the culture, and yeah. Nice. That's the old culture. They were devoted. It's quite a statement about the old culture. They were dedicated, but they weren't complete. They weren't foolish either. But they had love and affection for him. Oh, Master, oh dear one, oh knower of religious principles, oh kind and compassionate protector of the shelterless. Really, he was a. They were blind because he was a killer of the shelterless. He was terrible, but they were thinking of themselves. You have given us shelter and protection. By your being slain, we have also been slain, together with your household and offspring. O great hero amongst men, bereft of you, its master, this city has lost its beauty. So it's quite amazing consciousness showing off the nature of loving affection, that it tinges one's consciousness so that one can see black as white, purple as green, and orange as polka dots. So now the city is gone. Everyone else is rejoicing because this demon has been killed, but because they love him, and they were the queens. They were the queens of the city. So now there is no more beauty left in the city. Just as we have. This is their first reaction. Just as we have, we're bereft of you. We have lost our beauty too. Because they were... What a shock. And all festivity and good fortune within it have come to an end. Oh dear one, and here is the moral. You have been brought to this state because of the terrible violence you have committed against innocent creatures. So they saw this. How can one who harms others attain happiness? Purport. Having expressed their sentimental grief, the ladies now speak practical wisdom. They are beginning to see things realistically because their minds were purified by the agony of the recent events and by the association of Lord Krishna. Let's see if this one talk about the Tattva has a comment here. The ladies now speak practical wisdom because their minds were purified by Krishna's association and the agony of recent events. So sometimes recent events, things that happen to us, even though they may cause us pain and agony, they purify and clarify the mind to see what is true, what is not true, what is valuable, what is not valuable, what is actually us, what is not us, what is ours and what is not ours. So difficulties, as must occur in the material world, if we are fortunate, they give us clarity of vision. But someone like Kamsa, who is a determined rascal, demon, atheist, etc., his difficulties of seeing his wrestlers killed and his plans destroyed caused him to be more intent upon his foolish path. So determination and persistence is sometimes glorified as the greatest quality. Because I say that even if you're a genius, the streets are filled with people who are genius who have achieved nothing in their life. Not filled, but there are so many. And if you're intelligent in this way, and if you're this and this and this and this and this, still it doesn't mean you're going to be successful. You have to be persistent and determined. That's what sometimes it is said, is that persistence is the most glorious of all qualities. And of course it has its glorious aspect. But if you're persistent about something horrible and foolish, then your persistence and determination becomes the cause of your destruction. So Kamsa was persistent in his enmity with the Lord, and that was the cause of his destruction. So, and he was Krishna. What did Krishna do to him? What did Vasudeva do to him? What did Ugrasena do to him? So this is just envy. How can one who harms others attain happiness? Lord Krishna causes the appearance and disappearance of all beings in this world. So now they're speaking closer to something that's more accurate. Their sentiment has been finished. And he is their maintainer as well. One who disrespects him cannot prosper happily. Sukadeva Goswami said, after consoling the royal ladies, Lord Krishna, sustainer of all the world, so not only is he the shelter of the universe and have the weight of the universe, but he sustains. What's another word for sustain?
Holds up.
Support. Supports.
Maintain.
Support, maintain. So not only is he have the weight of the universe, he's also maintains the universe, because he arranged for the prescribed funeral rituals to be performed, and he also promised them that he would take care of them. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this. O wives of Kamsa, today you have met with great misfortune. So he spoke so sweetly. Even though Kamsa met with great fortune on that day, because first of all he was tortured by anxiety for his whole life. Second of all, he was thinking about Krishna his whole life, but in fear. And then finally he attained the spiritual form, an eternal form. So he met the greatest fortune. So, but still, he saw the mentality of the queens. And you can't, there's a right time and a wrong time to say things, even if they're true. So they were grieving. So he first accepted, yes, this is most misfortunate, unfortunate. But I'm obliged to protect you, so why should you worry? Because that's what they said. Now we've lost our shelter. You were the protector of the shelterless. That was us. Now we have lost you. We have no shelter. And Krishna said, Krishna, the maintainer of everyone, that was the term that was used to describe him, the sustainer of all the worlds, said, now I am obligated to protect you, so why should you worry? So that's another point of that there are certain of the citizens, the ladies, the children, the elderly, they should be protected in a culture, in a proper culture, in a proper society. And then, so Krishna took care of the brothers of Kamsa, according to how they were approaching him. And then Krishna took care of the wives of Kamsa and the wives of the brothers. And then after consoling all the royal ladies, Lord Krishna, sustainer of the worlds, arranged for the prescribed funeral rites to be performed. Then Krishna and Balaram released their mother and father from bondage. Kamsa had had them in prison for so many years, and offered obeisances to them, touching their feet with their heads. Devaki and Vasudev, now knowing Krishna and Balaram to be the Lord of the universe, simply stood with joined palms. Being apprehensive, they did not embrace their sons. Krishna treated them like their parents, but they were filled with knowledge of Krishna's position now because they saw what he had just done, or they had heard of what he had just done. So they didn't know what to do. They didn't know whether to... They knew Krishna touched their feet with his head, and they felt like touching his feet, but they couldn't do it because it was inappropriate because they were his parents. And they couldn't embrace him because they knew that they were the Supreme Lord, so they were stuck in between both realizations. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, there's no comment here. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, remembering the events of Krishna's birth, and observing his power in killing Kamsa, Vasudeva and Devaki saw Krishna as the Supreme Lord, and therefore they cannot embrace him. Being aware of the custom that parents do not bow to their children, Vasudeva and Devaki did not offer obeisances to Krishna. So they couldn't embrace him, they couldn't offer obeisances, and paralyzed from fear, as they were confronted with him being the Supreme Lord, they just stood there. And that ends the 44th chapter, and it ends this volume, and also ends Kamsa, and there's a miserable material existence. We'll read the last . The wives of Kamsa and his eight brothers were grieved. This is in the last two paragraphs. We'll read that from Krishna book. At the sudden death of their husbands, and all of them struck their foreheads and shed torrents of tears, crying loudly and embracing the bodies of their husbands, which lay on the wrestling dais. The wives of Kamsa and his brothers lamented, addressing the dead bodies, "Oh, dear husbands, you are so kind and are the protectors of your dependents. Now, after your death, we are also dead, along with your homes and children. We no longer look auspicious on account of your death. The auspicious functions to take place, such as the sacrifice of the bow, have all been spoiled. Oh, dear husbands, you treated persons ill who were faultless. And as a result, you have been killed. This is inevitable because a person who torments an innocent person must be punished by the laws of nature. We know that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the Supreme Master and Supreme Enjoyer of everything. Therefore, one who neglects his authority can never be happy. And ultimately, as you have, he meets death. Since Krishna was kind and affectionate to his aunts, he solaced them as far as possible. The ritualistic ceremonies performed after death were then conducted under the personal supervision of Krishna, because he happened to be the nephew of all the dead princes. After finishing this business, Kamsa, Krishna and Balaram immediately released their father and mother, Vasudeva and Devaki, who had been imprisoned by Kamsa. Krishna and Balaram fell at their parents' feet and offered them prayers. Vasudeva and Devaki had suffered so much trouble from Kamsa because Krishna was their son. Devaki and Vasudeva were fully conscious of Krishna's exalted position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, although Krishna touched their feet and offered them obeisances and prayers, they did not embrace him, but simply stood up to hear the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Krishna was born as their son, Vasudeva and Devaki were always conscious of his position. So sometimes the contrast is made between the love of Vasudeva is not being quite on the level of the love of Vasudeva and Devaki being on the level of the love of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, because when Yashoda Mai saw the universal form, she saw it two times of Krishna. Her love did not diminish at all, because the power of her love overpowered her visions and realizations of Krishna's opulence. This is an attestation to the power of her love. So not exactly on the same level, but wonderful nevertheless. Okay, thank you. I guess we'll end here. And because we're leaving in a couple of days, we won't have class tomorrow either, or the next day. The next day, and then won't be classes for another week and a half or whatever.
What is the next class?
After some time.
Oh, okay.
Not next. Today is what day of the week?
Tuesday.
So not next Wednesday, but the next Wednesday, I think. I come back, so probably on Thursday or maybe the next. When, but you'll be gone, yeah? You'll be in giving class yourself in Bali, yeah?
Krishna willing.
What will you speak about?
Krishna.
In what form?
It's always a surprise to open the Bhagavatam and ask which voice is it, what you don't speak about.
Very good. Okay. So what will you do? You'll send out an email when we decide when the classes resume. The devotees, so I guess you have to send one out saying there's no class tomorrow.
Yeah,
well.
Send one out tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I did last time.
Yeah. Dick. Thank you very much. Sorry, it's good they come through his kill though, yeah?
Are you evil?
Devotees all happy? It was too bad.